Hi, my name is Leanne, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I was sitting outside here in Cabo San Lucas until the people at the pool started these major announcements and a big, huge pool party. So I'm moving into my room right now. So bear with me one second. It was really beautiful with the background that I had, and I thought that you might all enjoy that. But since they decided to start a big, huge drinking party outside, I didn't find that appropriate. So I am now moved inside. Can everybody hear me okay? Good, okay. Hold on one second here. Let me just see where my screen is. And everybody can see me okay, right? Good, okay. Hold on one second. Let me turn my screen up. There we go. Now I can see everybody. Okay. Judith, how much time do I have?
20 minutes. Do you want me to hold up the phone at 5?
Yeah, that'd be great. That would be great. Again, my name is Leanne. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And thank you, Judith, for asking me to speak. I agreed to speak at this meeting. And I forgot that I was going to be in Cabo San Lucas, but I thought, well, what a great backdrop this will be to be here in Cabo, because my husband's got a convention going on here. What a perfect, you know, backdrop. And then I had everything all set up, and then they started this, I don't know, drinking game out by the pool, and with a big loud megaphone, like during meditation, I was like, what the heck is going on? So anyway, you get the view of my hotel room instead of the beautiful pool area. But thank you for asking me to speak. I'm really glad to be here, even though I'm in Cabo San Lucas. And I've been traveling a lot lately. Judith has asked me to speak on fear. I know that there's probably some new people here to the Big Book Awakening that haven't done this work before. And just really quick, let me just kind of give you a little quick overview. The Big Book Awakening is not a fellowship. It's not ever meant to be a fellowship. It was a way to do the work. So when we started the Big Book Awakening, I'm kind of giving a little brief history, a synopsis of what we are, just so that those of you that are new to this type of work, this is a way to do the work. But it became so popular because people were having spiritual transformations and the recovery was being transformed in a way that it just got so popular because people's lives were being changed by the way we do this work. Not just like Judith said, people with food addictions, any other kind of addictions, not just drug, alcohol, and Al-Anon, but every other addiction that's out there. The steps, I think, should be required for life in general for everybody. And the way that we do this work became so popular that there were so many people that were wanting to do the work. We started off as workshops. And so we had all these workshops going on all over the place, either on Zoom, and especially when COVID started on Zoom, which just became so popular. We literally had like 500 people want to sign up for our first workshop after we all spoke at a convention in New York last March. And then it just got so popular that everybody wanted to do the work this way. So I don't want anyone to think that we're trying to take the place of Alcoholics Anonymous, NA. We are a way to do the work so that we can bring our experience to AA, so we can bring our experience to NA, so we can bring our experience to NA or SA and all the other A's that are out there. And it has transformed our life, and it's transformed my life. I found this work, doing this work about 11 years ago. My sobriety date's November 9th, 2005. And for the first 4 years of my recovery, I didn't have the type of recovery that I have today. And by the way that we do this work, and one of the steps that has revolutionized my outlook on not just my life and myself, but my relationship with God has been this inventory. And within this inventory, we discuss fear. But before I can talk about that, I want to just kind of briefly talk about how we look at the first step. We spend a lot of time in the first step so that you could qualify yourself as to what you are and to understand your ism, alcoholism, drug addiction. What is it that you have? Are you a drug addict and not an alcoholic? Are you an alcoholic that has, that's powerless over alcohol. So you find your truth when we find this out over the 5 weeks that we spend in this first step. And I've got to have a gut level experience with this first step, or else I'm not going to see the importance of going on to 2, 3, and 4. And in the second step, I have to be able to believe. I got to believe that God's going to do something in my life. He's not only going to restore my sanity, he's going to restore everything, my finances, my room, everything, that God has that ability. Do I believe in a God that can do that? Do I believe in a God that has enough power to do that? And I have to believe in a God that's got that type of power. I can't believe in some inanimate object. And the big book talks about that in We Agnostics. It says, haven't we at once even worshiped a flower or our sunset, right? Isn't that preposterous or mental goose flesh? I think it says something like that, right? It's crazy. It's preposterous to even say that we can worship an object that has no power to change my life or doesn't care about me. I need a God that's going to be able to change my life and that's going to be able to care about me. A doorknob and a sunset and a flower and a sunset are beautiful things, but they don't care about me. Right? If I have to start off with believing that God is loving and all forgiving, then that's where I can start. And that's what we do in the second step. And then the third step, I'm willing now to make a decision to turn this over to God. And I see in the third step that I've been playing God, right? I see in the third step that I've been running this ballet and the show, and that I've been the director of my life, and that self-reliance has failed me. And we see that self-reliance fails us in just about every step as we go through this work, because anytime that Leanne does self-propulsion on things in her life, I see that without God's help, I see that I fail, right? And I begin to see that when I look at inventory. How do I see that in inventory? I put that person's name in the first column that I resent, right? I think this is going to be my grudge list. I have a grudge against this person. I start writing this grudge list. I have a grudge against my mother-in-law because she wore white to my wedding, you know, and she danced during the father and daughter dance. She told me I couldn't wear a veil because I wasn't a virgin. This is just a true story, by the way. Those of you that have heard, seriously, she did this. And if you want to write a resentment inventory after I talk about her, then I understand. So, you know, so here's this resentment inventory that I'm writing on this person, right? And I'm sitting here in this position, the finger pointing position. And so for those of you that haven't done the resentment inventory the way that we do it, we do 1-2 full pages for every resentment that we have, whether it be a principal, institution, or a person. And what I find is that I go through this, I found that I have more resentments against people than I do institutions and principles. So I'm just going to stick with that so I can show you the example of fear that comes behind that. So when I do this inventory, I get right. I see that I'm a real alcoholic because now I understand what alcoholism is in the first step. And then now I believe that God can restore me to sanity. See, because even though I've always had a belief in God, I've been an agnostic. Like how can I be an agnostic if I believe in God? Because an agnostic is somebody, that's why it's titled We Agnostics and not We Atheists, because a lot of us come in as agnostic. We believe that there's something out there, but what kind of relationship or why does it care about me? You know? And so here I came in believing about God. I knew God that could care about me, but I only gave God just my alcoholism. And then all of a sudden I get to the third step and I see that I need to rely on God for everything. Not just give God my alcoholism, because how am I going to go through this fourth step unless I believe that God, I can turn everything over to God? Because now I begin to look at it. Now I start to stir up the pot again. I start to get angry as I'm putting this person's name in the first step. I mean, in the first column, all right? And in that first column of that inventory, I see in that first column that I'm mad at my mother-in-law because she did what I just told you about in the second column. And in the third column, we have these seven areas of self where I see things like, well, I'm the best daughter-in-law she could have had, because that is the idea that I have behind all that. But the opposite of that is that I'm not good enough. See, the fears that we're looking at here are not fears of bears or fears of sharks swimming in the ocean here in Cabo San Lucas. We're talking about debilitating fears that block us from God. debilitating fears that block me from you, and having problems in personal relationships, right? Unable to make a living. These fears and insecurities is another word that I like to look at, are the things that keep me from moving forward and hanging on to a resentment. How does that look, right? How does that look? So when I start to be, when I start to look at these fears that I have, because like I, when I look at the seven areas of self, and for those of you that haven't done the work this way, hopefully this kind of sparks enough interest for you to say, I'm curious about what she's talking about. Maybe after this meeting, you find someone to take you through this work. And for those of you that have done this work, you know what I'm talking about. So we look and we see that really my problem is not the person in the first column. My problem isn't my mother-in-law. My problem behind all of this in my that I'm feeling is underlying fears and insecurities that I have about myself, that I'm being disrespected, that I have that I'm not loved, that I'm ignored, that I'm invisible, that I'm not good enough. And those are all the fears that I have behind my mother-in-law. See, because if I didn't have those fears, if I didn't have any one of those fears, let's say that I didn't have the insecurity of feeling good enough. Not good enough. Let's say I didn't have the feeling of being disrespected, but I do have those feelings. I do have those insecurities, and those are deep down within me, and only God can cast those out. So I see now that it's really not about the person in the first column. It's about me overcoming the underlying fears that are fueling that resentment in the first place. Does that make sense? We see that. If you've done this work, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Listen, fear and faith, right? I need to have faith that God can remove these. I need to have faith that a power greater than myself is going to be able to remove these fears, because I have to see that I find these fears objectionable. I have to see that I find those objectionable, because when I go to 6 and 7, right, it's going to tell me that. In 6 and 7, it's going to see, we look at the things that we have found objectionable. And if we're not willing to let go of them, we ask God for the willingness to let go of them, right? I have to be able to find the things that I find my fear, I find my insecurities objectionable, because that's what's blocking me from having good, healthy relationships with you, and good, healthy relation and a relationship with God. Because I'm thinking that I can and put everything into my life, and that I don't need God's help. But I have to be able to see that only God can cast out these fears. I've never been to a therapist that said, okay, now we're going to cast these out, right? Earlier in the big book, it says I'm beyond human aid. If I'm beyond human aid, right, that means that my sponsor can't cast out these fears. That means that my husband can't, my kids can't, that nobody can, that a power much greater than myself is where I need this help. And that's why it's so important that I have also a gut level experience in that third step. I got to rely on something that's powerful enough to help me overcome this. Because here's the problem. I have a resentment against my mother-in-law. And now it says that resentment is the number one offender. If resentment's the number one offender, it is offending me 24/7, because she goes everywhere with me, right? When I haven't overcome this, she goes everywhere with me. She goes in the shower with me. She goes to work with me. She goes to bed with me. She goes to Cabo San Lucas with me, right? Screw that. I've taken her everywhere with me in my head, because I'm carrying that resentment with me. And I want to be rid of resentments, right? I need to be rid of resentments. I'm going to read on the bottom, the last paragraph on the page 67, it says, notice that the word fear is bracketed along the difficulties with Mr. Brown, right? It shows that on the previous page when we're looking at the columns. Mrs. Jones, the employer, and his wife, this short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives, right? Look around the fear. Fear is also the insecurity, the thing that you're feeling, the thing that just gets you just, you know, like completely pissed off. It was the evil corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. I didn't deserve her to treat me that way. I didn't deserve her to think less of my family because she had an issue with my nationality or my ethnicity, right? She did. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve, but did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classified with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Fear is the evil corroding thread. Evil, the word I think of when I think of fear, I think of evil, I think of wickedness, I think of torment. And the only thing I know that qualifies to have those, the wickedness, the torment, and the evilness is the opposite of God, right? The opposite of God. Bill Wilson talks about him. He says, if there is a devil, he's the boss universal, right? So if there's a God, there's obviously the opposite of God because we see our world today. And there's so many things, there's so many other fears that are underlying today, especially this last year. You know, so many things that where are we putting our faith? That we have to believe that God's got our back and that God's going to bring us out of this. Faith and fear have the exact same definition. Faith and fear is also the same definition. Faith is believing in something I can't see will happen. Fear is believing in something I can't see will happen. What's the difference? The difference is the source behind it. Faith, the source behind it, is the power much greater than myself, whom I choose to call God. Fear, the source behind it, is the opposite of. You can call it whatever you want. Bill Wilson calls it the devil, right? I mean, who's running my life right now? And every time I'm hearing these fears, every time I'm feeling these fears, it's that little voice, right? It's me. It's that voice. It's the opposite of the higher power that's telling me you're not good enough. Oh, she disrespects you. All these insecurities. I need to be rid of this. Now, when I go over to the other side of this resentment inventory, when I turn over to the other side, I begin to see the realization of this. The realization is that maybe I've mistreated people too, but then where has I begin to see my selfish behavior on the other side of it too, and how I've looked at things. But let's go back to fear. So what happens? So I have all these underlying fears. What happens? It takes me back out again. So just the fact that I feel like I'm not good enough, do you think I'm going to go back out and drink again? Thanks, Judith. Just the fact that I feel like I'm disrespected, I'm going to go back out and drink again. Here's the wonderful thing about how we do the work. We don't just end at the resentment inventory, looking at the fears in the third column. We don't just end there. We take those fears. Now we go over to a fear grid, because now we're going to get a great visual of what those fears look like. And so now I look at those fears and I put all those fears in a column on this grid. And I'm trying to dumb this down a little bit for those people who've never done this before. And I'm trying to make this as simple as possible, because what I want you to see is maybe the fear of not being good enough isn't just going to take me out again. I have to see there's a chain reaction. It's like a domino theory, because here's what happens. I don't feel good enough. Then I feel ignored. And then if I feel ignored, I feel abandoned. And then if I feel abandoned, I feel alone. And then if I feel alone, I feel like there's no God. And then if there's no God, I feel like then I drink and then I die. And then I see that self-reliance fails me. See, the end of the chain reaction for me is that I'm going to end up drinking. I may not drink just because I don't feel good enough. I may not drink just because I'm going to feel disrespected. But the fact is that I'm still feeling those things. What's happening? Where's God? God's nowhere in there. Because if God's going to remove this, I shouldn't be feeling this. If I'm going to ask God to remove these fears in the 6 and 7, I shouldn't be feeling this. But there's a chain reaction that happens, right? A chain reaction that happens subconsciously in my mind. I don't feel, you know, I feel disrespected. Then I feel I feel cheated. I feel ignored. I feel used. No God, right? Where's God? So God's not there. So what the heck? I drink is to die. If drink is to die, then I see that what? Self-reliance has failed me. Because if self-reliance is Leanne allowing that chain reaction to happen, because I'm not going back to the source of God, having to remove those fears from my life. From me. It's not about working on your, look, this inventory isn't about working on your defects. That's the most retarded thing I've ever heard in my life. We don't work on our defects. If I could work on my defects, what do I need you guys for? What do we need God for? I just work on them, right? How is working on your defects working for you? Probably not. Hasn't worked for me, because I know that I need every single step in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is a step of humility and being humbled. I don't have the power to remove that. My sponsor doesn't have the power to remove that. This is not a sponsor-reliant program. This is a God-reliant program, because if I'm relying on God, he's the only one that can remove those things which are blocking me from him, those fears, those insecurities. And I begin to look at that as I write this on paper. Why do I have to write it down? Something happens when it goes from me thinking it, to my hand, to the pen, to the paper, and then to saying it out loud to another person in my fifth step. That's the beauty of this process. I want to be free of this. Don't get to the place to where you think, don't listen to people. They go, oh, fourth step, everybody, it's like, everybody needs to freak out about this. Everybody should be excited about getting to the fourth step. I can't wait. I couldn't wait. The way that we go through the work, one, two, and three, I'm like, oh my God, now I can't wait. I can't wait. So I could be free. How free do you want to be? That's what Mark Houston said. How free do you want to be? There is some freedom behind this. There is some freedom behind this. Being able to look at this as intensely as we do, being able to be rid of fear, being able to be rid of, listen, I'm not saying that every single fear is going to be gone. I'm not saying that every single fear is going to be removed, but to be able to recognize that this is what's fueling my resentment. And this is the reason my relationship with my mother-in-law today is nothing like it was before. And it's not because she's changed. She hasn't changed. She's 80, you know. People who aren't in the program who get older just get worse. You know, old people, they just get worse, you know. But it's, I've changed. I don't run around with her in my head anymore. I don't really, she's like water on a duck's back. You know, and I have a great relationship with her. As a matter of fact, when I get back from Cabo, I'm taking my in-laws and my mother to Montana. We're just taking them there for Mother's Day. Because I love her, you know, I love her today. I see that she's sick like me, especially when we get over to the other side, to the realization. So thanks, Judith. Thank you. Anyway, it's been a pleasure to be here with you from Cabo. And for those of you across the world, praise God for Zoom that we have had this and that we've been able to touch lives. And hopefully I've touched yours in a way that makes you want to do this work if you haven't done it already, and so that you can be free of fears. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Leanne. Such a pleasure to have you with us, and absolutely delightful that you could come in from anywhere you are. And that's one thing COVID has given us. Yeah, I used to see you guys once every year down in San Diego. Now I can see you any day of the week on Zoom. It's such a lovely pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for taking your time out. I'll go ahead and stop the recording now.